Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Kavaza, and for today, we're going to get into a conversation that is actually quite close to me, and it's around what happens to athletes and people in that particular sector, because I think there is a perception that people that are, you know, that play at the highest level, you know, are doing well financially, but we often realize that that is not, you know, always the case, and that is one of the things that the group that we're going to be talking to is going to be talking to us about. What are the realities, some of the work that they are doing in the space, and you know, some of the interventions that are out there, especially in the economy that we're in. So to make sense of it all, we are joined by the team from Booth Africa. We're joined by the founders of Booth Africa, that is Bongani Mthombeni as well as Matthew Booth. And we're just going to be getting into that conversation. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all.
Hello.
Hello.
Cool. So where I want to start this is, maybe Bongani, you can just outline for us, when it comes to Booth Africa, give us the elevator pitch. Usually, you know, we're a business platform, so, you know, that's people want to know, you know, very quickly, what is it that you guys are doing? What's the problem that you're trying to address? And, you know, maybe what's the solution you've put behind yourselves?
Okay. Thank you for having us. Well, Booth Africa was founded to address the gaps in football. So we've identified three main areas. And so our value proposition covers those three areas. Mm. So essentially, we identified the first gap being a gap in youth football development, where there isn't sufficient football investment in children, boys and girls, aged between 5 and 18. We just saw that as a gap. And also, so what we then do to address that gap is we curate bespoke educational football activations or football clinics, where we involve former professional footballers to impart invaluable skills to these children. Mm. And there's also an educational piece to address socioeconomic challenges in these areas. So it focuses on rural areas, townships across the board. So that's the first area of the first pillar. The second one is to address the gap in football infrastructure development. We see schools and townships in rural communities across the board where the football infrastructure is dilapidated. In a lot of the areas where we do these football clinics, the kids are running around on gravel. There isn't football infrastructure. So how we address that gap is we offer turnkey artificial grass football fields. So super courts, five-a-side fields, full football fields to FIFA standards to essentially address that gap. Then the third one, which is one that we're very, very passionate about, and it speaks to your intro, and it's livelihood restoration for former athletes, former professionals, former professional footballers, which is why we're very intentional about involving them in our football clinics. And one of the ways that we involve the legends is through international football games. So we've got partners in Botswana, and they actually founded the Clash of Legends. It's Nicholas Matthews and Sekano Koko, who's also an ex-professional footballer that played for the Botswana national team. And recently we've had Clash of Legends games in Botswana, so South African legends versus Botswana legends. And that really helps the footballers with their livelihood restoration. Because they get involved in this, our sponsors come on board, we're able to give them sustenance, we're able to give them a fee for appearing and for actually playing, and it's a great initiative. But it goes beyond just the game. Proceeds from these large international football games also go to beneficiaries that we identify that have got physical disabilities and are no longer able to make a livelihood from their football careers or athletic careers. And case in point, recently, we Matthew and I went down to Bloemfontein where we handed proceeds to Patrick Ace Mbutu, who's an ex-footballer that now has a visual impairment and can no longer make a livelihood for himself. So that's in a nutshell. And we've got, of course, aspirations to go further into the continent with our Clash of Legends interventions. And yeah, just livelihood restoration for footballers is key.
All right. I think that gives us a sense of what's going on.
A nice overview.
Yeah. And especially the three pillars that you are talking about.
Yes.
And there's two in particular that I want to drill down on. And I'm going to start with the last one that you spoke about.
Yes.
Because it's an area that I've observed, but I've seen it across the world, because my coverage is for Business Day, technology, media, telecoms. And when you're looking at the media piece of that, right, you can't divorce it from sports and entertainment.
Sure.
And you see it locally and you see it internationally. It's not just a South African mm-hmm. thing. People play professionally at very high levels, but either soon after, or, you know, sometime after, there's so many countless stories, you know, someone has filed for bankruptcy, or in the event that they pass on, that's when either they pass on or they get sick, right? And you understand, you know, that their financial situation isn't as rosy as what's going on. So mm-hmm. I'm really glad that we have Mr. Booth in the building to just give us a sense. Maybe you could give us, you're a former footballer, so you can give us the reality check of what it means to, I guess, play at that level, right? In the research that I've done, you know, you often hear two arguments that either a person has earned a lot of money early on in their career and they don't have the necessary infrastructure to sustain, you know, that money over the long term, whereas most people earn little then a lot later on. You know, sports stars earn a lot and then there's nothing else after that. So that's the one bucket. Whereas on the other side, you then hear that actually athletes in certain leagues aren't actually paid as much as we think that they are paid. So maybe you could give us a reality check of what's going on.
Yeah, the statistics that I often use, and this is not a scare tactic, this is very, very real in Europe and in South Africa. 75% of professional footballers 5 years after retirement will be either bankrupt, divorced, or drug or alcohol dependent, or a mixture of those.
Wow.
That's pretty scary. When you look at the stats from the NBA, NFL, in the States, very, very similar.
Mm.
And this is not only a sporting issue. It's an entertainment one as a whole. I was listening on the radio this morning to Carlo Chadebe's very emotional state of affairs. He's a very famous actor backstage, played Duke. You know, very similar circumstances to what a lot of ex-sportsmen find themselves in. And if I could take one piece of advice from all my experiences, is to be able to, while you still have a high profile, to network then.
Mm.
You know, create a network then.
Yeah.
Because just like when you drive a new car out of a dealership, you lose, similarly upon retirement, you lose your value instantly. You know, and it's quite surreal to go through that from a psychological point of view, economic, physical.
Mm.
Everything changes. And a lot of us cannot handle that.
Mm.
And only a few of us actually come out of the game with a high enough profile to still retain interest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's vitally important, and that's why I'm very grateful to have met Bongani. She's, you know, got her master's in chemical engineering. She's a director at this global engineering company with incredible. She has incredible business acumen,
yeah.
And that's something when I retired, I didn't have.
Yeah,
hardly any of us have that.
Yeah.
So when it came to pushing my agenda and really wanting to give back, to be able to sit with corporates was very difficult for me because I didn't speak their language. Mm. I didn't talk their talk. Now, to some extent, I can.
Mm.
And I can actually see their body language change when I do. So that, for me, was the most pleasing thing about having a mentor in that regard. And more athletes, more entertainers must try and surround themselves with a healthy entourage.
Mm.
People that will help them post-retirement, in the afterlife, what I call the afterlife. That's vitally, vitally important. That's one piece of advice that I'll definitely give.
Okay. I'm just going to do a quick follow-up to that. Lots of people have tried different interventions. You know, we've spoken to, we recently had Slicker on this platform, and he was talking about this was on the artist and music side, pulling artist money together so that, you know, maybe a fund can be created and then people can go out and invest. And then, you know, the proceeds from that can be used as a buffer, you know, for in people's careers, because artists, just like sports stars, you have a little bit more longevity because it's not a physical thing, but you do have the ups and downs. It's not like a constant thing. So to sort of help to measure out your revenues over time, you know, let's put this stuff in place. We've seen, you know, I think MultiChoice has a program about going to school after you've played, and soccer, you know, and all of that. So we've seen a lot of different innovations. All right. What you've just also given us a couple of things that you suggest from a fundamental, from a foundational level, right? As a person is signing whatever contracts they're signing, right? How can a person be approaching that, right? Because, you know, perhaps that's where people should be attacking, you know, the conversation, as opposed to at the end of the career, maybe look at things from the from the beginning. Yeah.
In my opinion, there's one solution and one solution only. That's a forced pension fund. So, and I'll give you two examples as to why I said it. One, I have a ex teammate who got into the financial industry, and he was asked to target footballers, current footballers, and he had at one other stage about 70 clients, footballers, current footballers, who earned 1.5 to 2.5 million rand a year. Over a period of 4 or 5 years, every single one of those players ended up cancelling their policies. He would have a player earning 2.5 million rand a year go into the bank and cancel his son's education fund, which was on 800 rand a month. So it's a lifestyle. It's lack of education. It's lack of preparedness. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. That type of thing. It's very difficult to get an adult to be able to trust somebody else with their hard-earned money, especially when they're under pressure from family members, friends. You might call it black tax. So in my opinion, the solution is that forced pension fund. And the reason why I say that is because in Holland, for example, international best practice, they have a system of sorts where I think it's about 15% of their salary goes into this pot. And then 6 months after retirement, you have three different options on how to take your money out. The fund, I think, is on about 900 million euros at the moment. You obviously need some form of financial entity firm to put a large amount of money into that pot initially, so that you can then generate sort of your exponential sort of growth. You need to get SAFA, the PSL, the players union around the table to agree to something like that. But I feel that's really the only way that we can do it. Forced pension fund, and then players. You don't have to do it exactly as per the Dutch, but you could tweak it to the South African environment. But something of that sort's got to be done. And it's something that I suggested. The late, great Phil Masingo passed away a couple of years ago. I had interviewed him 3 months earlier, and I think that was in October, November. He passed away just before Christmas, I believe, if I remember correctly. And SAFA then had a knee-jerk reaction of having this indaba. Let's get around the table and talk about, you know, the plight of ex-players.
Yeah, yeah.
to this day, none of those minutes or any of those resolutions have been followed up on.
Crazy.
So again, I just want to highlight that that particular, you know, pension force, there must be an obligation, you know, must be a force pension fund. That's, I feel, the only way we can get around this issue.
Mm.
How we do it for musicians or artists, that's going to be a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Because their money comes in, I think, a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a bit more erratic.
Erratic, exactly.
Yeah. So because, and that's, I think, one of the best things about sport, you know, in general, is that there's a lot of organization around it, right? Players are in teams, which are part of leagues, which are part, there's a PSL structure, there is a SAFA structure, there's all of that stuff, which is, which are collective structures that entertainers and, you know, artists typically don't have. So Wangani, one of the reasons why I started, you know, with the issue of, you guys are calling it livelihood restoration, is that appears to me like an issue at the end of a player's, you know, sort of, let's call it playing life, right? But if we're going to talk an infrastructure discussion and grassroots, you know, development discussion, as much as we have coaching clinics and, you know, making sure that your football stadiums are where they're meant to be, you have the physical facilities in place, the balls, the kits, the socks, all of that stuff, surely this is something that should be part of it, at least if it's in an academy sense, right? If maybe if it's a club or something, you know, that's, you can see this person, maybe they are in their teens and you can see, okay, this person is going to play professionally, maybe start, you know, on that level. Your thoughts on that front?
Yeah. So you're 100% right in that it's something that needs to be long-term and sustainable.
Yeah.
And so with our mandate at Booth Africa, and what we want to do, we rely a lot on corporate support and corporates wanting to make a sustainable difference long-term.
Yeah.
And a lot of corporates are aligning their corporate social responsibility with sustainability, with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Yeah.
And so we've had to align our business model to that as well, because we want to make a sustainable and a long-term impact.
Mm.
And for you to be able to see a 13-year-old and be able to systematically invest in their football development and growth and identify that, wow, this is a rising star and there's a scouting potential to go and plug them into Mamelodi Sundowns or something.
Mm.
You have to keep engaging with that community, with this little boy, with that school, and to have a long-term sustainable impact.
Mm.
And so for us, and it speaks to the livelihood restoration, it is imperative that we work with the South African football legends.
Mm.
And we select our legends based on the communities that, you know, they can give back to. So, for example, if it's an activation or it's a program in Soweto, we will try and source legends that grew up in Soweto or that reside, because they know their life there. They can give back to that. And then they can also identify the talent there.
Mm.
So we really look at a long-term program. Our business model is not an academy model for now.
Mm.
We really rely on corporate partnerships. And I'll give you a classic example with mining houses, for example, that have areas of operation across the country. There's so many of them.
They usually have their own little leagues.
Oh, they have their own little leagues and that. And their leagues are critical to partnership.
Mm.
So when we put together a program for an Anglo or an Assmang or whatever mining house, we firstly look at their areas of operation, their host communities that they have to invest in. And then the involvement of their local leagues within the program, because you also don't want to tread on people's toes.
Mm.
You want to show that this corporate is well vested in tangibly investing in this community to have full inclusivity or inclusion, or a big EDI drive.
Yeah.
And a spin-off for community participation and involvement. The business opportunities for the lady that sells amagwinya at the corner is going to get involved in this football program is massive as well.
Mm.
So it's not just a touch and go and in and out, you do a football clinic and you're out. We want to have partnerships that are long-term, sustainable, where you are investing in these communities sustainably. It's not just an in and out.
It's also ultimately mining companies. I mean, they mine a finite resource. So ultimately, it's going to run out. They're going to pack up and leave. So you want to be able to leave something tangible for the community.
100%. Yeah.
So are we pushing for infrastructure builds, but also giving kids an opportunity to shine in those areas. Because outside of our metros, there's very little opportunity from a football point of view. Oh, generally, I think.
Yeah.
But definitely from a sporting point of view, there's very few opportunities. And that's why we see massive migration from a football point of view to Johannesburg, particularly. Little pockets of excellence in Cape Town and Durban as well. But generally, everything comes up to Joburg.
Okay. Because this is a business platform, we always ask about the business model. But what I'm interested in is, as Booth Africa, right, where are you guys in your sustainability journey? And when I say that, I mean there's a lot of discussions around I'm just going to use the word philanthropy, in the philanthropic space about, you know, reducing reliance on, you know, donor funds and corporates. You know, good to get those, but once you have them, you know, is it possible to have some type of a model in place where you're generating your own income? And, you know, because what tends to happen, you identify a problem, donor funds come in, but once donor funds run out, it can shut down an entire, you know, set of programs. And that, to your earlier point, now whatever connection you had made with that community ends, and, you know, people are quite bitter after that. So maybe you could just talk to us about where you guys are, you know, on that journey.
Yeah. Okay. So on a business model or financial point of view, so our business was initially self-funded. So Matthew had established a trust or a foundation where it was his means of giving back.
Yeah.
But with Booth Africa, we expanded that to address broader gaps, to look at livelihood restoration in a more massive way, and to partner with corporates. So we're not just looking for, hi, we're having a Christmas party, please give us 100,000, and then it's an in and out type of thing. We want long term, and we want sustainability. So sustainable partnerships with the corporates. It's not just a in and out. And through the football activations and football clinics models with various partners and implementing multiple programs, that helps us to sustain the business.
Yeah.
And through Clash of Legends and having more international football games and livelihood restoration for the legends, that helps us to sustain our business. And looking at it on a profitability point of view and on an impact point of view, we want to find ourselves having sustainable revenues where we can, at our own accord, decide we're going into community X because we were there a year ago and we want to keep going there year two, year three, year four, year five. So our corporate, or our request to corporate, and I will use this platform to have my little business development
please
drive,
do.
Please.
Speak to them.
Is for them not to have corporate social responsibility as just a tick box exercise for BEE purposes. Let us start there. Okay. For them to be intentional about investing in the communities where they operate beyond the life of their operations. Mining houses, your Sasols, your oil and gas, etc. Right? For them to be intentional about a sustainable impact and giving back to the individuals whose families have in turn given back to their own business operations. It is absolutely key. We know the legislation. We understand the ticking the boxes. We get that. We get all those matrices and KPIs, and we get that. But for us, it's really about a long-term sustainable partnership where we can curate a bespoke program and according to the corporate's budget to make a tangible impact, and for the country and the continent to know that said corporate is playing a sustainable role in a little boy's life in a township, or that a corporate is. And we do have media avenues, and this being a media platform as well, we are able to generate content. We are able to partner with broadcasters so that the impact that said corporate is making in that community, in that platform, is known and is recognized. Having a corporate experience myself, I know what it's like to have all the KPIs and to say, yes, we did this and we really made a sustainable impact. But I challenge corporates and I implore them to really put their money where their mouths are and to go beyond just ticking the boxes. And with partnering with us, it's really excellence or nothing. That's how we roll.
That's how we roll. Matthew, maybe we'll give you the last word on the conversation. She's made the impassioned plea.
I have
to corporates around what needs to be done. And you know, it sounded like you wanted to say something, but in that, one of the things I wanted you to end us off with is the gaps. Obviously, we've been talking about some of the gaps that you guys have identified. But when it comes to whether it's infrastructure, whether it's grassroots level, whether it's facilities, whatever it is that you've seen, either in your playing years or now, where you're actually trying to put these programs in place, we had a conversation with the consulting house Oliver Weinman about 3 months ago about the fact that African football should be bigger than what it is because, or just on audience size alone, right? Africa is a bigger audience than Europe, but Europe has the biggest leagues. And they've identified that in whatever country you're looking at, and then all the way up to the COSAFA level, right? You're dealing with a lot of just basic issues around infrastructure, player support, all of this stuff, you know, in all of our various countries. And some might argue that South Africa probably has some of the most advanced infrastructure when it comes to football, but clearly there are gaps. So what are you seeing? Where are the gaps? How can we plug them?
Yeah, if you look at the continent, it's always very frustrating as a footballer to look at, for example, the French national team and you think to yourself, what could have been, you know, if we were able to retain that that skill. Brain drain is a general issue in South Africa. The brain drain is a huge problem. From a football point of view, that's not really the case because our PSL is run very well. And that entity is able to retain most of our talent. But from a infrastructure point of view, I would probably harp on that issue here in South Africa and the capacity management. You almost have to put as much budget into it to training people how to manage a facility so that it doesn't get locked up. It doesn't get hijacked by a local community or gangsters and used for ulterior motives. And so that boys and girls actually can use it in a safe environment, have great collateral equipment, kit, the right type of coaching. So there's all these little elements that have to be pieced together to create a virtuous, you know, facility that can be used to its full. And again, we should be really creating centers of excellence all around the country. It should never be centralized.
Yeah.
So I would probably harp on that and just make people realize that we're not looking for donors. We're wanting partners that have a sustainable vision and that don't just want to know numbers. How many kids are you affecting? That's such a turnoff. To hear that, you know, we want to emphasize the quality of that knowledge transfer, emphasize the relationship that we will be building with that community, with those group of kids for a couple of hours. We become the parents. People don't understand the power of that, you know, and the knowledge transfer and the education piece that's built into that. And just to... the enthusiasm and the shine in the eyes, you know, during the session is just fantastic to see. And hopefully we can start to roll out across the country, get ex-sportsmen involved. And unfortunately, a lot of them are sitting at home, 15, 20 years of experience, and they haven't been inducted back into the industry. And we're desperate to do that.
All right. So that's where we end off. It has been a really great one. Just talking to the team from Booth Africa, that is Bongani as well as Matthew, giving us some insight into the work that they are doing to try and improve the state of football in South Africa. And, you know, they have a couple of pillars that they were outlining for us, you know, around youth development, you know, around, you know, having programs that they partner with, you know, with their corporate, with the corporates, and then also talking quite a bit around livelihood, you know, restoration. Anyone listening, you know, can tell that it's something that I've looked into quite a bit. So it was really great understanding, you know, some of the realities, you know, on the ground. And I liked something that, you know, Matthew said earlier on around, I think it was having forced retirement packages, also talking about, you know, the reality of lifestyles, you know, creeping into this, and then also at the same time just making sure that people are as educated as they can be. He did also say that you can lead, you know, a donkey to the water, but you can't necessarily you know, force it to drink. So there is agency, I guess, on the side of you know, people who are playing to also think, you know, around how they want their lives to be. I think he called it the afterlife, you know, how they want that to be. And also just talking about sustainability, I think Wangani gave us some great insight into how they're thinking around, you know, being sustainable, how they're thinking around making sure that the work that is being done, especially with corporate clients, goes beyond being a simple tick box exercise, and that we actually have a lasting impact, and that, you know, people can do their bits, especially in some of the more outlying areas, because opportunities are less than in the metros when it comes to actually taking advantage of a football and infrastructure. So that's been it. We were with Wangani, we were with Matthew, and that is the team from Booth Africa. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.